Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. We have a big docket, so let's get right to it. First, some thoughts on the Murdoch case in South Carolina. Second, the East Idaho News is turning over evidence for the change of venue hearing. Third, R. Kelly says keep the boys out. Next, a pastor is in some big trouble. Wait until you hear what this woman's boyfriend did to her. And 10 wounded in New York. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. Now, if you haven't done so already, I'd ask that you please hit that subscribe button as well as that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we put up new content or go live. And that's a good segue into, that's right, tomorrow will be Tuesday. We'll be going live 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Please join us. People can send in their questions and we will answer. We want to know what you want to talk about, and, well, we talk about it. And then immediately after that, we have our Patreon show for our Patreon members. And in that particular circumstance, you can call in, and we'll have a conversation about whatever you want to talk about. All right, let's get straight to the docket. Now, we have talked about the Murdoch case down in South Carolina. Paul and Maggie Murdoch were shot in early June, and obviously they passed away as a result of their injuries. And the family has had a lot of controversy. And although there were always talk that the Murdoch family received special privilege because young Paul Murdoch's father, his grandfather, and his great-grandfather were all involved in the judicial system down there for the last 85 years, it's basically been called a situation where nothing got done in the criminal justice system unless the Murdochs approved it. I did not realize this, but I was reading some commentary and a lot of comments in regards to the commentary section of a newspaper down in South Carolina. And the thing that jumped out at me, and it was rather interesting, and it makes you think, you realize how jaded people become with the judicial system when you see a comment like this. But yet, I think I understand why. Think about how many times we see public figures, we see politicians who clearly have violated the law. And if it was you or me, we would be charged immediately. But because who they are and maybe the status that they hold, nothing ever happens, right? We've all seen it where the investigation is ongoing and it goes on for years and nothing happens. And in this particular case, the comment that jumped out at me was said that, you know, if no one is ever charged with the death of Paul and Maggie Murdoch, then you know a Murdoch was involved. Now, we are certainly not saying that anyone in the Murdoch family had anything to do with the death of Paul and Maggie, but I thought that was a very interesting comment. And given the power that this family exercised over the judicial system down there as the prosecutors for so long, it really makes you have to wonder, is this the system we want where individuals have no faith and they know that depending on somebody's last name, that someone may never be charged? We basically saw the interference that the family ran when Paul Murdoch was charged or was under investigation for the boating accident, which resulted in the death of Mallory Beach. Family was trying to interview witnesses before the police could, try to get people lawyers, trying to get their stories straight. So I thought that that was rather interesting. If you know that nobody's going to be charged, you know a Murdoch must be involved. And we know that Paul Murdoch was charged in the death of Mallory Beach in the boating accident, but it was only something that, for lack of a better term, got into the public and they had to file charges. And once it got out of the kind of local police, charges had to be filed. But I think it had more to do with the public indeed. So just something to think about, but I think that shows a lot of the cynicism that people have with the judicial process. Let me know your comments below. Do you have faith in the justice system? Do you think it works? Do you think there's two tiers of justice? One for the powerful and wealthy, and then one for everyone else? Let me know. Next on the docket, do you remember, I don't know when it was, maybe 2 months ago, maybe early May, the East Idaho News received subpoenas as well as some of their reporters regarding information and stories that were run in regards to the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell matter. And that would be relevant for a change of venue hearing. Well, East Idaho News did what anyone would have done in the news media. They would have fought that subpoena to prevent their reporter having to testify. That motion, it was originally filed by John Pryor on behalf of Mr. Chad Daybell, that was withdrawn. But apparently, both the prosecutor, the deputy special prosecutor, Rachel Smith, and Mr. John Pryor, who's counsel for Chad Daybell, have approached the East Idaho News providing documentation regarding their case coverage. And they complied. Little surprising that they would, in fact, do that, but their position is, well, this was all public information, and therefore they agreed to compile it for both parties. Now, I guess this is their system of being a good citizen, but there was nothing requiring them to do that. So what exactly did they turn over? Well, from December of 2019 through July of 2021, there have been 261 stories published about this particular case. The East Idaho News also produced every Facebook post by EastIdahoNews.com regarding Lori Vallow or Chad Daybell, JJ Vallow, and Tylee Ryan between the same time period of December of 2019 through July of 2021. They also produced every video that they have produced or shot regarding this particular story, as well as 231 photographs. Now, the interesting thing that I gathered from this was that they also provided a set of comprehensive graphs and charts showing East Idaho News's audience size in comparison to other Idaho media, Utah media, and Wyoming media who's been covering this story. What's interesting is and we can put up this slide here for you, is that the East Idaho News really gets a lot of traction as it relates to this story, even compared to the Idaho Statesman, which has also been covering the story as well. But the overall percentage of views and the traffic metric is actually quite small. And when you look at the global page views, it's insignificant. It's 0.0016%. Now, that's somewhat interesting, but obviously the question is going to become, what is being viewed by the local individuals? The information that I've reviewed, it doesn't appear as they can break that down as it relates to the people there in Idaho, in the county in which they reside. So I'm not sure that this is going to provide much help for the courts. And in fact, it also appears that most of the traffic that the East Idaho News gets comes from the internet, but there's no way of breaking it down specifically as to the counties in which the trials will be held. So this is good information for the court to have, but ultimately the judge is going to have a better sense of the community. The judge is going to be able to say, hey, I live in this community. I know the people that have brought it up or conversations that I've been involved with, they know what's going on, and these individuals cannot receive a fair trial in this county. Now, the court's own opinions are not necessarily evidence, but it's something that the court is going to weigh in. Ultimately, the court has to look at and say, do you believe that we will get enough jurors during the jury selection process, also known as voir dire, that we can seat 12 jurors plus maybe four alternates to make sure that we can make it through the trial. So we'll see what evidence is actually presented at the hearing for the change of venue. But based upon the information that I've reviewed, I'm not sure it's going to have much impact. Yes, people look at it, but the question is, even if somebody knows about the facts of the case, have they formed an opinion? Are they able to keep an open mind, listen to the evidence that's presented in court, only make their decision based upon legal and competent evidence admitted in court, and then follow the court's instructions? As we saw in the case of the police officer, Derek Chauvin, there were back jurors that were quite aware of what was going on, but it didn't mean that they were not qualified to serve. I think jury selection will be the ultimate process. Perhaps the court can make a decision and say, hey, let's just move it. Let's just avoid any hassle. But really, the presumption is to try the case in the jurisdiction where the alleged crime took place. We'll see. I'm a little surprised East Idaho News voluntarily provided the information. Normally, this is basically the work that the defense would have to compile, organize, and do the statistical analysis for everybody in the courtroom so that you could make your argument. The fact that the prosecutor requested it, apparently the East Idaho News says, well, now both sides want it. I guess we'll go ahead and do it. Like I said, normally the burden for a change of venue motion is on the defense. And I wish next time I have a change of venue that the newspapers or television stations will provide me all this information saying, hey, basically both sides want it. Why don't you just turn it over? Very unusual. We'll have to wait and see. Next on the docket, R. Kelly. He's got a trial coming up. Well, guess what? He wants to keep the boys out. Now, we're not talking about his posse of young boys that follows him around and maybe allegedly intimidates and harasses witnesses. No, his lawyers want to keep allegations of alleged conduct with young boys out of the trial. In fact, the defense filed a 55-page motion to keep this evidence out. First of all, if it's taking you 55 pages, well, you probably have not refined your argument. And guess what? This is what they call 404B evidence. We've seen this in, remember that guy named Harvey? We saw it in that case involving that guy named Bill that was reversed. His case was reversed to show a pattern, to show that this is not some sort of isolated incident, just some mere happenstance. No. That's why they're trying to bring it in. I get why the prosecutors are trying to do it, bring it in. My biggest gripe with 404B evidence is if your case was so strong, you wouldn't need 404B evidence because it means your case is potentially weak. So we'll see what the judge rules. Hopefully we'll have a hearing on it rather quickly. Next on the docket, well, another religious man, another man of the cloth, has got himself in some big trouble. Gregory Adams, he's 63. He's a pastor in Alabama, and he's been arrested after extensive investigation apparently revealed that he has sexually abused many women in his church, and it went across state lines. Ooh, going across state lines. What does that mean? That's right. It means it could go federal. Now, obviously, we'll give Pastor Adams the presumption of innocence because he has not been convicted and the charges against him are simply mere allegations. Now, if these women somehow all conspired against him, we'll have to wait and see. But my experience is in these particular cases, usually these women have never met or were not aware of the other victims and they were going to have very similar stories. We will just have to wait and see. The point is another person in a position of trust taking advantage of individuals when they're there to seek them out for help, guidance, and they take advantage of that position. That's wrong. That's why normally when somebody is charged with a crime and they're in a position of trust, the punishment is much more severe. All right, let's take a quick recess. And when we come back, we'll talk about a guy who's not going to win the Boyfriend of the Year Award. Please, go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right. A Georgia woman is recovering. That's right. Recovering. Why, you may say, what is she recovering from? Was it the excitement that she jumped up and hit her head when her boyfriend surprised her with a big bouquet of roses for her birthday? No. She was in recovery because, well, her boyfriend shot her not once, not twice, not three times. That's right. Four times in the arm. Now, why did he do this? Was he defending himself against this unidentified woman? No. Her boyfriend, a guy by the name of Brandon Strong, allegedly shot her four times because he became upset because he could not recall the password for his unemployment benefits to log into the website. That's right. Shot her four times because he couldn't remember the password to the unemployment website. Apparently an argument ensued because neither he nor the unidentified woman could recall the password. Wow. Just wow. What kind of world are we living in, ladies and gentlemen? And I'm just thinking, and I don't know that suspect, but my guess is he probably shouldn't have had a firearm anyway. Eventually, we're all going to have to decide what kind of world we're going to want to live in. Another example of that was Saturday night in Queens. 10 people were shot outside of a Mexican restaurant. Two men walked up, opened fire, and they got away by two other gentlemen accompanying them on their mopeds. Now, this attack took place about 10:30 p.m. Seven of the victims were unidentified targets. Okay, so that means only three people were of the targets of these individuals, but they shot seven other people and they fired some 37 rounds. These guys are idiots, okay? And I am not encouraging anyone to go harm anyone, okay? These guys are criminals, they're thugs, and they need to go to prison for a long, long time. But these idiots opening fire where there's other individuals around, innocent people, and these other innocent individuals get harmed because of their knowing voluntary acts. These guys need to go away to prison for the rest of their life. They do not deserve to participate in a world where you can exercise self-control and your impulses. And my guess is that whatever these knuckleheads thought that these other people needed to be harmed for was probably something insignificant. But either way, they need to go to prison when they are caught. 37 times, and they hit 37 times they fired and missed their targets, most of the time striking innocent victims. What a bunch of knuckleheads. We need to decide, ladies and gentlemen, what kind of society we want to live in. One where people can walk up and open fire at a restaurant and basically nobody gets away with it or charged. And if that's the way we want to live, I guess just head on down to New York, because that's apparently what goes on there just about every day. We've all seen the videos where people literally assaulted, shot at on a public street, and little to nothing happens to them. People just need to decide what kind of society they want to live in and what kind of society they want to live in with those types of individuals, whether they need to be locked up or at home. And don't get me wrong, as a criminal defense attorney, I will defend and represent an individual charged of a crime, hold the government to their burden of proof. But I'm telling you, I'm never going to represent these guys. They're thugs. They need to go to prison. All right, next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. But before we get there, let's announce our winner from last week. Yes, the winner, overwhelmingly, Emmanuel Luna. He's the man that finally admitted that when he received his 46-month sentence from a federal judge for bank robbery, that, hey, this was pretty stupid, and he couldn't imagine why he thought he was going to get away with it. Good thinking, Mr. Luna, just came a little too late. But needless to say, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the week. We will be sending you a mug. May have to wait until you get out of your federal sentence to receive it, because I'm not sure they're going to let us send it to you. But when you get out, contact me. We'll take care of it for you. All right, finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day, Melissa DeCoria. She tried to cash a check at the Idaho Falls Bank in Idaho. Well, when she went in, the bank teller recognized this name on the check and the company. There's been a string of checks tried to be cashed from this company. The teller simply asked, did she work for this particular company? And she stated that a friend at the company gave her the check. And she's then stated that it was because she had done some work for this individual. Well, the bank didn't buy that story, and they contacted the police. Then she told the police that she was cashing it for a friend, and her friend was going to give her $50 because her friend didn't have an ID. Now, this is the oldest story in the book. Now, Ms. DeCoria looks like maybe she's been up for a couple of days. I'm going to go on a limb here to say that she's probably been suffering from, that's right, use of illegal substances. This play has been gone for 15 years or so. Rarely are checks cashed. 15 years ago, it was incredible how many checks were being cashed. It was ridiculous. Not so much anymore. Ms. DeCoria, your friend sets you up, and you failed miserably for yourself. Now you're looking at felony charges for presenting this bogus check and trying to cash it. And I certainly hope that this will be an opportunity for you to get the help that you need and find a new set of friends and hopefully stop using drugs. The police were very familiar with her friend, but it's unclear whether her friend was actually arrested. But Ms. DeCoria, for you thinking you were going to get away with cashing a check for your friend and getting $50 out of it, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. I actually hope you don't win. I just hope you get the help you need. All right, that's all we have for you today. Please join us tomorrow when we go live, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, and we'll still probably put up a regular show as well. Also, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and even TikTok. That's right. All right, have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time.